Morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We are podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show whenever you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. Later on in the program, we're going to be speaking about some legislation that's coming up before the legislature that has to do with spying on citizens of New Mexico. Right now, I'd like to welcome Matt Bricks. He is the policy director for the Center for Civic Policy in Albuquerque, and Rena Sapansky, who's director of the New Mexico Office of the Drug Policy Alliance Network. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Good to be here, Mary Charlotte.
Good morning.
So today we're talking about the legislature for the entire program, and we're talking about, with you guys, the nature of nonprofit organizations and their involvement in the political process. And there are several pieces of legislation that have been introduced that could affect the status of nonprofit organizations in New Mexico. First of all, what is a nonprofit organization in the legal sense? I gather there are two kinds. What does each one do?
Well, there are actually several different kinds of nonprofit organizations, Mary Charlotte, but the two we'll probably be speaking about most specifically today are what are called under the IRS code 501c3s and 501c4s. And these two different kinds of organizations have very distinct characteristics. In the case of 501c3s, they are typically constructed to be what are called charitable organizations or educational organizations. They can be everything from your local foundation to an organization that does work in terms of housing and feeding people.
To KSFR
Public Radio, for example. It can also be organizations that engage in what we call civic engagement, getting people out, doing nonpartisan voter registration, advocating for issues at the state legislature or perhaps with their city councils or townships. So you have a whole range of what can be 501c3s. These organizations have the ability to directly advocate for their issues that they work on at the legislature, again, at town councils, at city councils. They can also ask members of the public to contact their representatives or people who represent them in public office. We're also probably going to be focusing on 501c4s. 501c4s more typically are organizations that have more of what is called a direct advocacy or a lobbying bent to them. Again, they could be organizations like Common Cause New Mexico, Conservation Voters. The organization for whom I work also has a 501c4.
NRA?
The NRA, exactly. There are lots of different 501c4s out there that do a lot of lobbying work, typically on issues. So,
Rena, your organization, the Drug Policy Alliance Network, that's also a 501c4.
That's right. We have both a 501c3 and a 501c4.
And what does your group do?
Well, we lobby for... under our 501c4, we're mostly focusing on promoting a public health approach to substance abuse. So we're really focusing on the issues, promoting effective policies, being at the state legislature, those kinds of things. But we also do a lot of public education. We do a lot of work with our members in terms of having forums around the state, educational events, things like that. And so they're kind of two distinct categories of activity.
So 501c3s, of which are arts organizations too, and 501c4s are nonprofit organizations. And then there's also something which is not a nonprofit called a political action committee. What's that?
A political action committee, the way it's defined most specifically is it's usually a group that comes together primarily for a political purpose. They want to intervene in a campaign, an election campaign. They want to advocate for the election or the defeat of a particular candidate for office. This is a very distinct kind of organization. When we think about how the government can actually regulate First Amendment free speech rights, the government has held consistently over the last 30 years, going back to a seminal case called Buckley versus Vallejo in 1976, that the government can regulate speech when it's political speech. And so when we talk about political action committees, these are organizations that, again, are trying to either elect somebody or defeat somebody when we're talking very specifically about an election. Their purpose is very narrow.
So a political action committee can be called something like the committee to elect Barack Obama, the committee to elect Joe Schmo for dog catcher.
That's correct.
And those are political action committees. What about the committee to pass bond measure number 3?
That can also be termed a political action committee. Again, some cities will call these measure finance committees. The states sometimes will call them political action committees. Again, because it's for the election or the defeat of a bond issue or a candidate. I should have said about a bond issue.
a bond issue, a candidate, or any number, basically anything that's on a ballot that somebody can go into an election booth and put an X in the square.
That's correct. And this is very specifically organizations that are set up for what is called political campaign intervention. They have a very narrow focus. You heard Rena talk a lot about Drug Policy Alliance and how they have a wide, broad focus. They do a lot of different things. They educate the public. They advocate for issues. They do all sorts of things. Political action committees do very narrow things.
Right.
They have one very specific purpose, and that's political campaign intervention.
To elect a candidate or elect, get people to vote for whatever their issue is. So an organization that does political issue advocacy, let's say you've got a group called the Organization to Repeal the Death Penalty, and there is a constitutional amendment on the ballot to repeal the death penalty. Is there a gray area between what an organization does that is a nonprofit doing an issue advocacy and a political action committee?
Well, again, what I would say is that when you're getting into the advocacy, when you're talking about promoting the election or the defeat of either an issue that is on the ballot to which voters are going to go in and they're going to cast a vote, whether it's an issue, whether it's a constitutional amendment, or if it's for the election or defeat of a candidate, that's when we start talking about political action committees. And that's when the government can regulate their speech by asking them to report, by asking them to disclose who their donors are, disclose their expenses. But when organizations are not advocating for the election or defeat of an issue or a candidate, that's when the government cannot regulate their speech. They cannot step in and say, tell us who your donors are, tell us what you're spending, report on such and so dates as stated throughout the year. So there's a very distinct difference between campaign intervention and issue advocacy. And this word political, I think, gets thrown around a lot too. And, you know, lots of things are political. We hear office politics, we hear decisions are political, and it's true. We live in a
the
very
personal is political. Who does the dishes after dinner is political.
Absolutely. But what's critical here in the distinction that we're getting at is, what is political campaign intervention? When are you starting to actually advocate for the election or defeat of an issue or a candidate? It's very, very simple.
So on a federal level, and we're talking about all this, ladies and gentlemen, for a reason, because there are some very important things going on in the New Mexico legislature right now that pertain to this conversation. On a federal level, what are the laws and the other entities that regulate what nonprofit organizations may and may not do? 501c3s, 501c4s, and so on.
Well, at the federal level, we have kind of four different entities that are, if you take them as a whole, you have very strict definitions on what is political campaign intervention and what is not. The first place that we typically look is to law. We look at the Bipartisan Campaign Reform Act, the so-called McCain-Feingold bill that passed in 2002. We look at the ways in which they lay out timelines before elections that they encourage advocacy organizations and nonprofit groups to not actually continue to advocate for their issues because they could run afoul of political campaign intervention. We also have the Internal Revenue Service that lays forth very strict guidelines and tests, if you will, for when a group knows they've crossed the line versus when they have not. We also have the Federal Elections Commission that's very specific about, you know, do not advocate for an issue within 60 days of a general election, within 30 days of a primary election. Don't use the words vote for, vote against, support, oppose. Very, very specific outlined issues.
So the Drug Policy Alliance, for example, if there is a drug-related measure on the ballot, you would restrain your activities for a time period before the election.
That's right. And we'd have to be very mindful. We're always very mindful of how we get involved around election season and what those implications are.
Matt Bricks, what does the Federal Elections Commission have to say about all this?
Well, what the Federal Elections Commission does is it takes a look at case law. And there have been several cases and more cases at both the federal circuit level and also at the Supreme Court level that have come out and have been very clear on what is and what is not political campaign intervention. And so what the Federal Election Commission does is it looks at, for example, the Bipartisan Campaign Reform Act, which I mentioned earlier in the program, and then it takes a look at case law, and then it issues regulations. And it says these are some guidelines that organizations, nonprofit organizations, should follow to make certain that they're not crossing the line into political campaign intervention. Again, some of the things I mentioned earlier, don't engage in, it was wise not to engage in issue advocacy within 60 days of a general election, 30 days of a primary election. If you're going to do communications, whether it's phone calls or email blasts, or if you're going to do radio commercials, or if you're going to send out mail, don't use the words vote for, vote against, support, oppose. So what it does is it takes it one layer deeper and it issues regulations based on existing law. I might add that New Mexico actually, organizations that operate in New Mexico don't have the benefit of this at the state level. We have what's called the Campaign Reporting Act. It has a definition of what is political purpose and what is a political committee, but it's a broad enough definition to where we don't have the same benefit at the federal level of a group or an entity issuing regulations to give further specificity to that already broad statute. So at the federal level, we have a much greater sense of what we can do and what we can't do, but at the state level, there's not as much specificity, and so there's a lot more questions about how groups can operate.
Doesn't the federal law apply to groups in New Mexico?
It sure does.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, in other words, if you are, for example, a nonprofit that violates some of the rules you just talked about, you are a nonprofit and you're saying, vote for John Q. Public, then you can lose your nonprofit status.
Absolutely. The IRS could come in, you could get audited, you could lose your 501c3 status, and you're done.
So what do you mean that we don't have the benefit of that level of specificity in New Mexico?
Well, groups that function within the state of New Mexico, both nonprofit organizations and organizations that do wish to engage in political campaign interventions and thus register as political committees, are doing so under the auspices of state law. They're doing it under the state's Campaign Reporting Act. It's the job of state officials to enforce that law, but we don't have regulations based on what that law actually means. So there's a great degree of, there's not a degree of specificity to really know what the law means in the state without regulations being issued. The same could hold true at the federal level. A group that's operating either in a state or at the federal level that wants to advocate on, say, drug policy, for example, or wants to advocate on healthcare issues. The Bipartisan Campaign Reform Act is somewhat vague, but because of the benefit of the regulations issued by both the IRS and the FEC, we have a much greater understanding of what that law really means. We're missing that layer in New Mexico.
Give us some examples of case law that are brought to bear on this issue of nonprofit versus political campaigning.
Right. So at this point, I said there have been a couple of cases. One is in the state of Colorado. One is in the state of Wisconsin that actually went all the way to the Supreme Court, one just recently in the Tenth Circuit in Utah. And what these cases take a look at is going back to the earlier part of the program at the beginning when we talked about the government. It's been ruled for 30 years at federal court levels that the government can regulate free speech, but only if it's political speech, only if it's speech that's intended to influence the outcome of an election. The government cannot regulate any other kind of speech if it's not intended to influence the outcome of an election. So what this case law has done is it has come in and ruled on certain cases. Mostly these are right-to-life groups that are bringing these cases about when they can advocate, when they can't advocate, what issues they can talk about, how they can say things, timing before an election, and so on. And the courts have gotten more and more specific in helping groups understand what you can do and what you can't do. There used to be something called the reasonable person test. A reasonable person looks at a mail piece, looks at a radio commercial, looks at an email and says, that looks like political campaign intervention. Well, that wasn't quite specific enough for the courts, so the courts came in.
I should say.
The courts came in and they said, you know what? No, actually, there can be no other reasonable interpretation but that it is political campaign intervention. And you take this with the regulations that I mentioned earlier that have come out from the FEC and the IRS, and that's how decisions get made about whether or not groups have crossed the line. So we're getting to a greater and greater degree of specificity and understanding when the line has been crossed and when it's not. And that's good because it should be predictable so that groups can do work without intervening in elections.
So we're talking to Matt Brix, who is from the Center for Civic Policy in Albuquerque, and Rena Sapansky of the Office of the New Mexico Office of the Drug Policy Alliance Network. So there is a bill that's been introduced that would require nonprofits or some nonprofits in New Mexico, and you can tell us about that, to register as political action committees. What is the purpose of this legislation? What's going on?
Well, the legislation is actually asking for 501c4 organizations, and it's, as Matt described, those are different. Those are advocacy type organizations that they would have to register as political action committees. What it's also doing is saying that anybody who acts as a third party voter registration agent, any nonprofit organization, would also have to register as a political action committee.
So if the League of Women Voters set up a voter registration table in front of Smith's, they'd be
a political action
committee?
Absolutely. Under this legislation, they would have to register as a political action committee. Even if they were registering people in a nonpartisan fashion, even if they were not discussing any issues or any particular election, there's so many groups in New Mexico that do voter registration year-round, that toward, you know, get ramping up before local elections, state elections, all kinds of things. And you know, really focusing on the civic engagement piece that Matt was referring to earlier, which is something that we're very concerned with, too. We're, for example, if we were to do, one of the issues that we're concerned about is people with felony convictions being allowed to vote, which they do have the right to vote in New Mexico. So if we, wanting to help them participate in the political process, wanting these folks to participate in elections, went out and had nonpartisan voter registration campaign at, you know, targeting locations where we think people with felony convictions might gather, we would, under this legislation, have to register as a political action committee.
Let's just talk for a second about civic engagement as a term. Civic engagement is the essence of democracy. It's basically a phrase that describes people getting involved in their lives through something other than shopping and having a family.
Absolutely, yeah, and civic engagement, I mean, you can go back to the 19th century and de Tocqueville when he came and looked at the way in which people in the United States organized into groups. And they organized into groups to participate in their communities. And it wasn't just around elections. It was around all kinds of issues, whether it's church or, you know, soccer leagues or, you know, library clubs, book clubs. I mean, all kinds of different things. All of these things fall under civic engagement. You're right. It's getting people involved in their democracy. But what's more, I think, as we've moved, you know, certainly over the last 20 to 30 years, nonprofit organizations, and Rena had a great example in terms of, you know, voter registration groups, nonprofit organizations have really acted as the link between communities and government. They've acted as the link both in terms of education, but also in terms of training people to understand how to go and talk about their issues to state and local officials, to, you know, register so that they're able to participate in the process. And that's what the essence of civic engagement is it's people coming together, forming groups, getting involved in their government, but also getting involved in their communities.
So what is the purpose of this legislation? In other words, who are the sponsors and why has this legislation been introduced?
Well, the current sponsor of this is State Senator John Ryan from Albuquerque. And I think the purpose of this, I'm going to speculate.
I mean, I know you're not in John Ryan's head, and I don't have John Ryan on the air, but
I could speculate. You know, I think the purpose of this kind of legislation, I think it has a lot of unintended consequences. I think the people may think they'll be moving towards a, you know, what is an otherwise noble purpose to try to get greater disclosure and transparency. But the truth of the matter is, organizations that are registered as 501c3s or 501c4s already participate in a whole bunch of different kinds of disclosure. They have to disclose to the IRS, they have to disclose to the state, they are responsible to their donors, they're responsible to the communities in which they serve. So there's a lot of transparency that goes around nonprofit organizations. The problem and the unintended consequences with bills like this is it's actually going to restrict some of the civic engagement work that I talked about earlier. It's actually going to force groups to stop some of the very important work that they do on education, on voter registration, on training people, on general engaging the public within their government. So I think it really could have a chilling effect. It really could stamp out some of the good work that's going on.
And that's really my major concern with this. I mean, we work with dozens of nonprofits all around the state. We partner with them on different issues. We've partnered with them to do things like registration of felon voters and things like that. And all of these efforts, in our case, are not specifically to influence an election one way or another, but it's to give certain constituencies a voice and to have those folks at the table. For example, when I do advocacy trainings, we often say, this is the issue that we're talking about today, but once you're done with this training, you can go out and advocate for anything, whatever's going on in your neighborhood or your home or whatever is relevant to your family. We're providing the tools, and I think that Matt put it really well. We are a really valuable link between the community and what can be a very opaque process at the legislature or in terms of influencing just public policy in general. You know, some of that stuff is not really obvious. It's hard. I mean, it's hard enough to find a parking spot at the Capitol, let alone, you know,
as we talked about, yes,
wait for hours for a hearing and then know who to talk to and know where to go. We see our role as being kind of guides through that process. And, you know, being forced to register as a political action committee, for example, if we did voter registration or because we do have a 501c4, you know, we'd really have to think twice about whether we could participate at the level that we do because of all the burdensome reporting.
So basically, the political action committee has much greater burdens on reporting than the existing burdens, which are already somewhat burdensome.
That's right. It's setting up another layer of bureaucracy through which nonprofits would have to navigate, doing things that are already regulated by the federal government and that are already perfectly acceptable laws on the books here in New Mexico as well. You know, I don't think that that any of us are getting away with anything here. I think we really do, and especially because we have the layer of accountability to our boards, to the communities that we serve. You know, we publish annual reports. A lot of this information is already available. Setting out another agency to which we have to communicate with and report all of this, it's, you know, setting out here 9 different specifications for what we would have to report on at least in this legislation is intimidating.
It would be different things even than what you have to report on as a political action committee or PAC on a federal level. In other words, there'd be a set of state rules and a state of federal rules?
Well, actually, this is just the proposals that we, or the one proposal that we just mentioned, and we fear there will be further proposals, is just a state-level kind of regulation that that some in the state legislature would like to impose on the nonprofit community.
Well, it sounds, I mean, just to help me and our listeners clarify things, it sounds a little confusing because it sounds like you would be, no, 501c4 nonprofit organizations would be one thing in New Mexico, a political action committee, and would be a different thing on a federal level, which is a 501c4.
That's correct. Absolutely. It'd be two different distinctions. The feds would look at, as you mentioned, 501c4s very differently. And I might add as well, you know, what I think is very clear for the listeners to understand here is that political action committees have a very specific purpose. They have a narrow purpose. The election or the defeat of a candidate, the passage or the defeat of a ballot measure. That's it. That's what a political action committee does. Nonprofit organizations have missions that are, you know, typically broad, and they do lots of different things. They educate, they train, they advocate, they do all kinds of things. And donors who seek out and wish to support those kinds of organizations a lot of times aren't the same people who wish to seek out and support political action committees because they believe in the mission, they believe in what, for example, Drug Policy Alliance or the Center for Civic Policy is doing in its civic engagement work. And it's not just that the burdensome disclosure requirements, but it's also, you know, perhaps ruining and in many cases depleting the work that the nonprofits can do because perhaps the donors want to go away. They don't want to support political action committees. I might also add that legislation proposed this session to limit donations, the amounts of donations, both to candidate committees and political action committees could have a huge effect on this as well. It could limit to a very small amount the kinds of charitable donations that nonprofit organizations could receive. So there are all
nonprofit
kinds
organizations as well as political action committees?
Yes. And it's okay for political action committees to have restrictions on the amount of money that's donated to them. But when you start talking about limiting to a, you know, relatively small amount the amounts of individual donations that can go into nonprofit organizations, you're really starting to not just hamper organizations in terms of the reporting and the, you know, donors who may leave if they think they're contributing to a political action committee, but it's also putting a very high bar on the amounts of donors that nonprofits have to go out and get in order to keep their doors open.
So is this, are you talking 501c4 specifically?
I'm talking any group that would be covered under a nonpartisan voter registration. I'm talking under the bill that we referenced earlier.
In other words, if somebody wants to give KSFR $1 million, would it hamper their ability to do that?
It would, if you're participating in this kind of activity, if you're doing nonpartisan voter registration, or if you were set up as a 501c4, and this is just the first bill. There could be other bills that come along, so we're not sure how other bills would affect other organizations.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of implications for this that we're only beginning to anticipate. But yeah, absolutely, what you're talking about. It may not just be individual donors. I'm not sure. For example, if you had a drug treatment facility that wanted to register its staff and its clients. Would that mean, if all of this legislation passes, would that mean they would have to turn down a $50,000 grant from the federal government or a $500,000 grant from the federal government? A lot of us are engaged in services. We have many grants also to do education with young people, education with all kinds of folks, and the idea that we would have to turn this money away because our work is somehow being characterized as that of a political action committee is really frightening. Because that's what keeps our doors open, keeps our employees paid, and all of that. And that's another issue here, is how vital the nonprofit community is to our economy, to the, you know, the legislative process, to public awareness and education and services. I mean, the implications of that are very far-reaching.
We're talking to Rena Sapansky of the New Mexico Office of the Drug Policy Alliance Network, and Matt Bricks of the Center for Civic Policy in Albuquerque. Now, there has already been, here in New Mexico, from the Attorney General's office and the Secretary of State's office, the request for some organizations to change their status in this same way that we're talking about, from a nonprofit to political action committee. What's that all about, and what has been the response?
Well, at this point, Mary Charlotte, what's happened is the Secretary of State, for whom the Secretary of State has jurisdiction to oversee the Campaign Reporting Act, which is the law at the state level that regulates political action committees. The Secretary of State has come to both our organization and another organization and ordered us to register as political action committees based on work that we did almost a year ago. We dispute their ability to ask us to register for all the reasons I stated earlier. We were very careful about how we did our work, when we did our work, what our work said. We were very careful to look at all of the guidelines at the federal level. And so we are currently disputing their ability to ask us to go ahead and register under this state law. And so we've filed suit in federal court and asked for relief in federal court so that we do not have to register under the Campaign Reporting Act.
It sounds like there could be, if this bill that you're talking about, John Ryan's bill, which is Senate Bill 247, if that were passed, there could be legal challenges to it along the lines that your organization, Center for Civic Policy, is already engaged in.
I'm not an attorney, but I can say that I think, based on what we've discussed today, I think that it's almost inevitable should this bill pass. And I would also say that other bills that seek to broaden or weaken the definition of political committee and political purpose within the Campaign Reporting Act, I think the state probably would be inviting legal challenges from all sorts of different entities, because it would really hamper all the great work that the nonprofit sector has done. It would hamper a major source of employment here in New Mexico, a major source of services to many communities, and a major source of civic engagement and connections, again, between the government and people.
Tell us more about what your organization does, Matt Bricks.
Our organization, the Center for Civic Policy, has been around for about 2.5 years, and we do a number of different things. We do public education, so we have a website, we do blogging, we send out emails on issues. We do a lot of advocacy work, both at the city level in Albuquerque and in other cities, and at the state level. We work on a host of different issues. We do focus group research, specifically around healthcare issues with business. We advocate for ethics issues. We advocate for environment and green jobs issues. So we do a lot of different work, primarily on public education and advocacy is where our work lies.
What about you, Rena Sapansky, the Drug Policy Alliance and the Drug Policy Alliance Network?
We engage in a whole range of activities. We have a lot of public education. We also do a lot of advocacy training. We work with a whole range of nonprofit organizations to kind of figure out issues that are of mutual interest. You know, for example, employment issues. We're concerned about employment issues for people with felony convictions. You know, other folks are concerned about employment. So let's find common ground and let's find something that we can move forward to bring some change into New Mexico. We also have a youth drug education program where we're working with teachers and students around the state to promote effective drug education. We have a video, and we're going to be doing some PSAs around that because we really feel that, you know, substance abuse is a huge issue in New Mexico. And we're looking for innovative ways to really deal with that, that are science-based, that are really based in public health, and don't rely on punishment and incarceration as the only answer.
Or on the student level, just say no is the only response, which if I am observing the world correctly, didn't really work very well as a campaign.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I, you know, schools are slowly moving away from that. But what one of our roles is to help them figure out the tools that they need and give them the tools. So we're doing trainings with teachers. We've actually been doing some trainings here in Santa Fe with our public school system about effective drug education. You know, teachers aren't given that much education in drug education, yet they're dealing with kids in their schools every day who are dealing with drugs. Hopefully not dealing drugs, but dealing with the drug issue and substance abuse.
And dealing with the incredible availability of drugs far more than alcohol.
Right. And so, you know, what we're trying to do is really get them some easy strategies to bring up the issue, to create safe space in their schools, to talk about substance abuse. So that's our youth education project. But we work a lot with people who have been incarcerated on drug convictions, people who have had substance abuse problems who feel that, you know, being engaged with treatment would have been better than being incarcerated. And many of them have lost their families, they've lost years of their lives, they're just getting into recovery now after decades of dealing with this. And you know, if our first response wasn't just to lock them up and throw away the key, I really think that we would save a lot of money and a lot of time and a lot of really, really horrible destruction of families that's been going on in New Mexico as well.
Yeah, exactly. And just, I mean, the quality of people's lives being so horribly disrupted.
Yeah.
Matt Bricks, back to the question of drawing these subtle distinctions, and I'm spending the time on this program for our listeners because it's something, I mean, there are some issues, for example, that have to do with drilling, which are very clear. I mean, either there's an oil rig on your land or there isn't, or a gas rig or whatever. But with things like what is a political action committee versus what is a nonprofit that does advocacy, those things are a little more subtle, and people will say, who cares, you know, non-advocacy, political, whatever. The difference, if this law, Senate Bill 247 or other laws like it, were passed in the New Mexico legislature, again, how do you think it would affect the many 501c4 organizations in the state of New Mexico who are doing advocacy and indeed who are lobbying the legislature right now?
Well, I think it would affect them in a few specific ways. First, I think it would, again, have this chilling effect on what it is that these kinds of groups can do. They would probably err on the side of caution before they went out and tried to educate their communities on issues of importance to New Mexicans, whether it's drug issues with treatment and prevention versus incarceration, or it's issues around health care, you know, drilling in the Galisteo Basin, which has been a big issue up here in Santa Fe. If we don't have the ability for nonprofit organizations and advocacy groups to get the word out to communities and encourage communities to engage their elected officials, we miss a critical step in the process. And I'd really, you know, shudder to think what would come of our society if the nonprofits were completely chilled and shut down in terms of their ability to intervene in this way. Secondly, I think that nonprofit organizations would not have the ability to do all kinds of other service work, because if they're deemed to be political action committees, again, we go back to this other law, an accompanying law that could pass that would put limitations on donations. You know, Rena talked about it earlier. If groups can't engage in the kind of service work that they're accustomed to engaging in and indeed that their communities need, I think that's a huge burden on the community. And I think the government's eventually going to find it's going to be a big burden on them, because the nonprofit sector does a lot of things that the government can't do in New Mexico. So I think there are very specific ways that the communities would be harmed and the groups would be harmed.
Rena Sapansky has to go right now, so we want to say thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And Matt Bricks is going to stay with us for another moment. Matt, there's a couple of other issues that I just wanted to talk to you about before we go in a few minutes. One is that there has been some discussion for a number of years about webcasting of the legislature. What is webcasting of the legislature? It means that there's cameras that would be able to show us on our little computers what's going on, like C-SPAN or something like that?
Precisely. It's C-SPAN for the New Mexico State Legislature. Interestingly enough, Mary Charlotte, C-SPAN is a nonprofit organization.
Is that right?
It is. C-SPAN is an organization that has done webcasting and television casting of Congress for many years. all we're saying, all we're seeking to do, or advocates are seeking to do, and indeed many in the legislature are seeking to do as well, is to bring the same sorts of service to New Mexicans. We're one of five states that doesn't actually webcast floor sessions in the House and the Senate of the New Mexico State Legislature. 45 states do it, and the federal government do it. And it's especially
45 states do it. Oh boy, we're number 46.
We are.
That sounds familiar.
We could be. And it's also, I might add, in a state like New Mexico, the fifth in terms of land size in the entire country, there are people who live in Deming, in Silver City, Las Cruces, Tucumcari, Farmington. They live hours away from the state legislature. The state legislature, on a long session, only meets for 2 months. You are shutting a lot of people out of the process if you don't allow them to at least view what their government is doing in their name. And it's such a critically important issue. And the unfortunate reality is that there are some in positions of leadership right now, specifically on the Senate side, who are blocking webcasting. And I think it's to the detriment of all of us in New Mexico.
So then there's another question of openness that I wanted to address with you, and that is conference committees. Some committees are open to the public and the public can go view them. Others are not.
That's correct. As it stands right now, when a bill is introduced to make a law or to perhaps make an appropriation based on the state budget, the process is that bill is then assigned to a series of committees, whether it's introduced in the House or the Senate. As that bill moves through the process, those committees are open. The public can come and watch, the media can come and watch, people can come and give input on the bill, whether they're for or against it. That's part of the process, that's good, and that's important. But when one side passes a bill that is different from what the other side passes, and they can't agree on the same language within that bill, say the House passes a bill on webcasting, and the Senate passes a bill on webcasting, but they don't have the same language, what happens is the leadership from the House and the Senate will assign just a few legislators to go into a room, shut the door, and then make the decision on what the final language is going to be.
So no public and no webcasting
since
we don't even
have public. Indeed, you know, the interesting thing about this, Mary Charlotte, is we found out is that in many cases, most of the other legislators don't even get to go in and find out what goes on. So it may be a legislator's bill that's being discussed. It may be a portion of the budget that they care about for their community. And there's decisions that are made behind closed doors that other legislators don't even get a chance to participate in, let alone the public or the media. So this is a critical issue, and New Mexico is one of the very few states that doesn't have open conference committees as well. And so I think this is, it then, of course, falls on civic engagement groups, advocacy organizations, to try to get more information out about what happens at the state legislature so that people in the far corners of the state have a sense about what's being done in their name.
Matt Brix is Policy Director for the Center for Civic Policy in Albuquerque, and it's just about time to go. If people want to find out more about these issues and learn how to participate in them, what should they do?
Well, there's actually an organization that I used to be employed with that I would really recommend folks go to the website. It's called Common Cause New Mexico, and it's just you can just Google it, or you can go to commoncause.org/New Mexico. And they are tracking a series of bills about openness, about ethics issues, and they can really find out what's going on. But I would also encourage folks to contact their local, their state legislator, their House, Senate member, and ask them not to take punitive actions against the nonprofit sector, against civic engagement groups, against groups that are doing nonpartisan voter registration. These groups provide a critical link between the people and the government in a whole array of different ways. And so I think it's incumbent upon people out there to help us make sure that nonprofits don't get punished.
Matt Brix, thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure.
And by the way, today, ladies and gentlemen, is Election Day. You have the opportunity for the very important action of electing school board members and voting on a bond issue. So don't forget to vote. It's your right and it's your duty. We're going to take a break right now. We'll be right back. Stay tuned to KSFR.